From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 28th day of July 2009. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. He's in Newmarket, Indiana. And K-State's Dan O'Brien will join us closer to the bottom of the hour to take up the energy markets. Dan's in Milwaukee this week at the annual Applied and Agricultural Economics meeting and says many of the papers presented have to do with corn-based ethanol. He'll tell us more later in this program. In just 26 minutes, meteorologist Don Day will join us for a look at the agricultural weather forecast. It is a Tuesday during the growing season, so along the way we'll get crop progress updates from the statisticians in the nation's primary corn-growing states right here on the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report, of course, is a production of public radio from the University of Illinois.
Support for WILL comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks by developing dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is at stuart-peterson.com.
In Chicago on a Tuesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. Nearby December wheat contract at 5.43¾ was down 4 cents. The March at 5.62½, 3½ lower, and May down 3½ at 5.74¾. Lead option soft red in Chicago for the September at 5.16¼, down 4¼. Hard red lead option September at 5.50, a penny and 3/4 lower. September corn futures from Chicago 3.20½, down 1¾. December 3.29¾, 4 cents lower. The March at 3.42¼, down 4¼. And the May corn at 3.52¼, 4 cents lower. July at 3.60¾, down 4 cents on the day. September oats, $1.93½, down a penny and a half. Soy complex in Chicago, August soybean futures, $10.54½. The lead option up 33¼. September futures at 968, 23 cents higher. November at 927, up 20½ cents. And January futures at 931, up 17¼. March futures 932, 15¼ higher. August soybean meal at 331.90, up $9. September at 303.90, up $7.30 on the afternoon. August soybean oil up 22 cents at 33.82. September at 34.01, up 24 for the afternoon. Here's the way the numbers settled in the livestock side from the CME Group. August live cattle at 102.85, or that's the feeders, up 45 cents. The August live cattle at 84, 92.5, up 22.5, and August lean hogs down $2.32½ at 56.85. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Nearby crude oil futures, a settlement price at $67.23, down $1.15. August ethanol at $1.61, 1½ cents higher. Natural gas at 3.53¾, 6⅛ of a cent lower. The RBOB gasoline, $1.90½, down 2Ⅹ. And the heating oil, diesel fuel, 3⅔ cents lower, 3⅔ of a cent lower, at $1.76¼. Propane futures, 82 cents even, 2½ cents lower, two tenths of a cent lower for the day. And gold futures at $9.39, down $14.30. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 90.71, that's 9,071, down just about 36 points. And the U.S. dollar at 78.86 is up 0.22. The CRB index on the afternoon at 250.21 is down 170 for the day. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like from our own Mike Sola. He says tonight in northern Illinois should become partly cloudy. In central Illinois and northern Indiana, mostly cloudy. A few occasional showers. A couple of thunderstorms out there, too, primarily during the evening hours. In the south and the central Indiana, cloudy and showers and thunderstorms. Lows will range from 54 northwestern Illinois to 68 in the south. And then tomorrow in north and central Illinois, partly to mostly sunny skies. In southern Indiana, mostly cloudy, a few showers, some thunderstorms. Elsewhere, partly sunny, showers possible, especially early in the day. Highs tomorrow will range from 76, says Mr. Sola, in northern Indiana, to 84 in the southern parts of Illinois. At the bottom of the hour, we'll talk with meteorologist from Cheyenne, Wyoming. His name is Don Day. Stay with us.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on a Tuesday afternoon. On the line with us to take a look at the agricultural futures is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Why, good afternoon, Todd.
Interesting day in Chicago. Futures from the corn pit were a bit lower. On the soybean side, though, it doesn't look like there was a lot of news to push anything around. They managed to gain 33 cents in the nearbys, and you get out to the November, and there's still a 20-cent gain. What do you think of it?
Well, we were a little bit shocked to see quite as much movement in the beans as we did today. I guess we're looking at the tight bean stocks. We know they're there. It was actually done last week. China bought 1 to 2 cargoes for November delivery and switched some other beans for instead of out of Brazil, switched to the U.S. destination or out of the U.S. from their shipping destination. And it just seemed like the trade took notice of that today a little bit. Also along the way, the dollar has been dropping down, so the U.S. beans are cheaper than the Brazilian because of the Brazilian dollar being stronger. And we saw some bull spreading in there today. We also saw the August move through the 18-day moving average. And, that close above 1050 in the August does put it in a solid technical perspective, Todd. All in all, when you looked at the outside markets today with no other news than we had and the weather staying pretty much the same, crude being down $1.25, $1.50 through most of the day, the dollar being higher and the Dow Jones being lower, we were rather surprised to see quite the increase in the beans that did happen. But the technical picture did look a little positive on the close tonight.
It looked positive for the beans. Corn still struggling along, down a penny and three quarters in the SAPs December, down 4 cents on the afternoon.
But they bounce back. If you take a look at the balance sheet and what we're looking at, even if we do see some acreage reduction coming in on this next report, Todd, on the 12th, we're still going to have some awfully good stocks left. And we've got a lot of old crop corn still to be moved by farmers or elevators wherever it's stored out there because our carryover is still big. And for right now, other than the thoughts of an early frost, why this corn crop is looking tremendously good for the lateness of when it was planted.
It looks awfully good, and it looks even the further west, I'm told, the better it looks. And if the numbers I'm starting to see from the western corn belt are any indication, they could have an enormous crop in the field there.
We're hearing that. We haven't journeyed forth into Iowa. We do know that the crops in southern Illinois and southern Indiana and Ohio are behind quite a bit, and they definitely need a full season to get there. But, looking out our back door here, we're 3 weeks behind as far as maturity goes, but the crop looks tremendous.
What are producers asking you most often today?
At these low levels, do I sell a bounce in things in corn and beans both here? It's a hard question to answer because with the crop that we just talked about in corn, we feel that there's not a lot of room for a rally. So that's one of the hardest things to answer. The other thing was, didn't we get some positive numbers and towards the hogs, and yet we saw a tremendous sell-off today. We heard there was one large trader that said, get me out. Took down, run off some stops, and took us to new lows and kept pressure on that market and the cash market not reacting well. So not a good day over in the hog market.
Yeah, so the pits still have a little pop in them and some vindictiveness still left in there too, apparently, because they like to hurt people occasionally there.
They have been known to do that.
Well, that's what happens when you play with money, isn't it?
It seems to.
All right, so what else do we need to talk about today? Anything?
Well, I think that, there's been some papers written on the statistical anomalies, the lining up 1965 with this year as far as weather's concerned, Todd, with the idea that seemed to line up with planting dates, with the amount of moisture, everything that way. And that was a year of an early frost. So that's one of the things I think that's out there trying to lean a little bit on helping this market recover a little bit. I think that that's the big issue right now is what the August weather is going to be for the bean production, what the USDA is going to say on their August 12th report. Would they go about having a revision or saying they're going to resurvey if they thought they were within less than at least a million acres difference to what they come out in their last report, and that's one of the problems.
Well, we'll have to try and find that out a little bit later. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Todd.
And that is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report each and every Tuesday afternoon. Dave Dickey will be here. Actually, Dave won't be here. We'll have more from the statisticians in just a moment and a look at yesterday's crop progress report.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Listening to the Closing Mark Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of this program and of Commodity Week, both of which you can find on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. Now, corn silking advanced this past week, says USDA, by 24 points, leaving progress at 55% complete nationwide, and that's on par with last year. Still, it's 21 points behind the rolling five-year average, including the late last year numbers. Under ideal growing conditions, development was most rapid in the Corn Belt. 34% of the crop began silking in Iowa and Minnesota during the week, while 27% of the crop in Illinois reached the silking stage. Meanwhile, 7% of the nation's corn acreage was at or beyond the dough stage, equaling the maturity pace from last year, but still 10 points slower than normal. At 80% complete, doughing was most advanced in North Carolina, while the crop had yet to reach the dough stage in Iowa and Minnesota, as well as in the northern Great Plains and the Great Lakes region. Overall, 70% of the corn crop was rated in good to excellent condition nationwide, down slightly from a week ago, but up 4 points from a year ago. Nationally, 63% of the soybean crop was at or beyond the blooming stage, reports USDA yesterday, 3 points ahead of last year, but 13 points behind the average. That follows a sluggish start to the spring planting season. Crop development advanced rapidly, though, across most of the growing region, remaining at or behind the average pace in all states except for South Dakota. Pod set was evident in 20% of the 2009 soybean crop by the 26th day of July, 1 point ahead of last year, still 16 points behind the five-year rolling average. Pod set had begun in all estimating states, but was most advanced in the Delta and the Mississippi areas, leading all states at 86% complete. Overall, 67% of the soybean crop rated in good to excellent condition. That's unchanged from last week and 5 points better than last year. And finally, on the winter wheat, producers had harvested 79% of their winter wheat acreage by the week's end. That's on par with last year, still about 5 points slower than the average. More on conditions in individual states now from the statisticians in Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Minnesota, and Nebraska.
This is Brad Schwab reporting on crop progress and conditions for the week ending July 26th. A second week of cool temperatures averaging nearly 6 degrees below normal, accompanied with average precipitation, provided for favorable corn and soybean growing conditions across the state. However, the cool temperatures set growing degree day units back further behind the historic average. Growing degree day units since May 1 at 1,621 now trail the historic average by 115 units. The corn crop finished the week at 53% silked, trailing the 76% average a year ago and 93% five-year averages. 6% was reported in the dough stage, compared to 10% last year and 32% for the five-year averages. Leading the state in corn silking progress was the Central Crop Reporting District at 77%. Overall, 62% of the corn crop was rated in good or excellent condition, up 2 percentage points from last week. Soybeans in the bloom stage were reported at 46%, compared to 51% 1 year ago and 81% for the five-year average. 9% of the state's acreage was reported setting pods, and this compares to 14% 1 year ago and 39% normally. Leading the state in podding activity was the West Crop Reporting District at 21%. Statewide, 61% of the soybean crop was rated in good or excellent condition, up 4 points from last week. This has been Brad Schwab, Chief Crop Statistician with the Illinois Field Office of the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is Becky Summer of the USDA National Agricultural Statistics Service Nebraska Field Office with the crop weather report for the week ending July 26, 2009. Temperatures averaged 5 degrees below normal across the state. Precipitation was widespread, with most areas receiving around a half inch of rain. Some hail damage was reported from a midweek storm. Wheat harvest progressed rapidly and is over three-fourths complete, about 3 days behind the average. Corn conditions rated mostly good or excellent. Three-quarters of the corn has silked and is beginning to dough. Soybean conditions rated mostly good or excellent. Three-fourths of the crop is blooming and a quarter is setting pods. Oat harvest is nearly halfway complete, 5 days behind the average, and conditions rated 90% good or excellent. Alfalfa's second cutting is over three-quarters complete and third cutting is underway. Wild hay, pasture, and range conditions were mostly good or excellent and above year-ago levels. This is Becky Summer of the USDA's NAS Nebraska Field Office in Lincoln.
This is Dan Loftus, Deputy Director for the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, with the weekly crop weather report for the week ending July 19, 2009. Topsoil moisture supplies held steady last week as rain fell across central and northern portions of the state. Precipitation totals from Tuesday's thunderstorms were varied, with amounts ranging from under one-half to over 3 inches of rain. 61% of topsoil was rated adequate to surplus for moisture, up from 60% last week. The week was cool as daytime highs were generally 5 to 10 degrees below normal in most locations. As of Sunday, 11% of corn was at or beyond the silking stage, 5% ahead of last year but 28% behind the five-year average. 78% of the corn crop was rated in good to excellent condition, down 4% from last week. 39% of soybeans were blooming, 8% behind last year, and 24% behind average. Soybeans were rated in 71% good to excellent, down 3% from last week. Producers continue to monitor soybean aphid populations, which have been low thus far. This is Dan Loftus for the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office.
Hello, this is Greg Preston, Director of the USDA NAS Field Office for Indiana, and this is the crop weather report for the week ending July 26th. Variable rainfall amounts fell across the state, bringing some relief to the lighter soils. The continued cooler-than-normal temperatures left some farmers thinking that the crop's development has fallen further behind. The crop condition ratings slipped slightly for the week, as some areas did not receive adequate rainfall amounts and some wind damage was reported. Problems from the prolonged spring planting phase, especially late planting and wet soils conditions, also have been noticed. Precipitation ranged from 0.39 to 3.87 inches. Temperatures averaged from a high of 87 to a low of 46 degrees. For the week, there were 4.7 days rated as suitable for field work. 53% of the planted corn acreage has silked, compared with 64% for last year and 84% for the five-year average. 2% of the planted corn acreage is in the dough stage, compared with 1% for last year and 16% for the five-year average. Corn condition for the week was rated as 63% good to excellent, compared with 71% for last year at this time. 51% of the planted soybean acreage is blooming, compared with 50% last year at this time and 71% for the five-year average. 7% of the planted soybean acreage is setting pods, compared with 7% last year and 27% for the five-year average. Soybean condition is rated at 64% good to excellent, compared with 65% last year at this time. This is Greg Preston reporting from the Indiana NAS Field Office.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, Hudsonville, Illinois, and Crescent City, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from Illinois Public Media on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. On the line with us this afternoon, usually we talk about the agricultural energy markets, but Dan O'Brien from K-State is making his way back from the Agricultural Economics Summit that's been taking place in Milwaukee this week and is stuck in the airport there. So we're going to talk instead this afternoon with Dan Zwicker at ADM Grain Group in Decatur. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Good afternoon, Todd.
It's awfully good, my friend, to hear your voice. I'm glad you're okay.
Yeah, I'm a little sore, but that was quite an experience to go through. I don't wish that for anyone.
Well, I saw pictures of the car, Dan. It was not pretty.
No, it was not.
It's good that you walked away. That's really very good. So, you know, the question we have this afternoon, and I don't think we've delved far enough into it to figure out what happened, but why were beans up 20 cents in the November, do you know?
Well, we do have some pretty good soybean oil demand, and that kind of offered support initially. You know, it still continues to reflect a very tight old crop supply-demand situation in soybeans. So the soybean market is probably more, you know, focused still on tight old crop supplies, whereas since we've got a lot of adequate supply of old crop corn supplies, the corn market is probably more focused on the upcoming crop, which, you know, at this point looks pretty good.
And what do you hear, speaking of that? I've seen some numbers recently from Iowa in particular, maybe Nebraska as well, that tells me that their crop may be much larger than anybody had expected.
Well, I mean, that kind of goes with the season. I mean,
right.
When we have a good season, everybody keeps raising expectations. Just, you know, it says who can make the newest headline, and in this case is, you know, who can project the biggest yield is going to get all of his attention. And I think, you know, that's somewhat normal for a market to do that. And that's why markets always overdo it on the upside or the downside. And, of course, probably in this case, the market is probably going to, you know, push the yield too high, and then it's going to have to backpedal. So, but, you know, USDA will give us a little better inclination. I think, you know, everybody's kind of pricing in a big number from the USDA as we look at that August crop report. So, you know, I don't think too much of it. I think it's just part of how the market works from time to time.
I will say this, and at the end of the conversation I had earlier with Wayne Nelson, he suggested he wondered why USDA was doing the number again. And I did have a conversation with Joe Persaki about that earlier, or late last week, and his explanation was simply that there were so many people that thought that they would have to do it and should do it that they decided that they didn't have much choice. I don't think that USDA thinks they're finding anything different, that man, they're just going to have to try to confirm whether what they had the first time around was right or wrong. So I suppose we'll find that out later in the season.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I feel for Joe. I felt that he probably has to do that for political reasons because nobody believed that. But, you know, you know, I can only speak for some of the sampling some of our elevator groups have done in some of the wet areas, and they've been out looking. And a lot of those acres, you know, in late June that weren't planted actually ended up in corn. So, you know, you don't know. I mean, we'll have to kind of see. USDA does have a very good sampling, and I do respect that Joe made the decision to go ahead and do it and get it cleared up, because if you don't have it cleared up, it always kind of overhangs the marketplace. But it'll be interesting to see, you know, what kind of numbers he actually does come up with.
Thanks so much, Dan.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker is with ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. Back in 2 minutes when we'll talk with Don Day of Day Weather.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jeff Bossert. Governor Pat Quinn is meeting his share of opposition in a proposal to cut from prisons in order to save the cash-strapped state more than $100 million. The governor wants to lay off 1,000 corrections workers and downsize other facilities. The union representing workers fears that cutting staff in an already swollen penal system would endanger remaining employees. And Republican State Senator Dan Rutherford, who has the Pontiac prison in his district, thinks cutting 1,000 corrections jobs would put the situation, quote, on the brink of a disaster. Champaign-Urbana's Public Health District hopes to settle a budget dispute tonight with the Champaign County Board of Health over the funding of flu clinics and other services. Public Health Administrator Julie Pride contends the fiscal budget the Board of Health has proposed fails to address priorities and will keep them from not only providing shots at schools and for seniors in the county, but other core services like restaurant inspections and water well tests. The President Julian Rappaport of the Board of Health says it's in a budget crisis and needs to have something in reserves in the event of a disease outbreak. The two entities hold a joint study session tonight. A 26-year-old Southeast Indiana woman hospitalized with swine flu has died after 3 weeks after her younger brother died of the disease. Mindy McIntosh of Dillsboro died yesterday at University Hospital in Cincinnati. A family friend says McIntosh had been improving before a blood clot in her lungs and a rapid change in blood pressure led to brain swelling. Her 19-year-old brother Matthew died July 5th. Indiana State Department of Health says those deaths and that of a Lake County resident have been the only ones in the state linked to the swine flu outbreak. Infants and children up to age 14 die at much higher rates in Indiana than in other states. That's according to the 2009 Kids Count report released today. The national survey shows an average of 24 out of every 100,000 Indiana children ages 1 to 14 died during 2006. And volunteers will be knocking on doors in Champaign and Urbana the next couple of days to find out if residents have internet service and what kind of connection they use. Urbana Planning Director Robert Myers says the effort is part of the plan to bring a big broadband project known as UC2B to the two cities. I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason. On a Tuesday afternoon, we always check the agricultural weather forecast with Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon to you, Don.
Good afternoon.
Another nice cool day, a little rainfall on and off here, some gray skies, some sunny skies, but looks like growing conditions will remain really good across the Midwest. Am I right?
They are. Certainly, when it comes to looking at heat and temperatures, it would be a good thing if we could warm up a little bit, and I think that is going to be difficult to do. Temperatures are forecasted to still struggle, basically from the Rockies all the way to the Great Lakes, the Midwest, even the Southeast United States. Going through that first week of August, temperatures are still going to track below normal.
And then if you look further out, what do you see?
More of the same. It appears as though we've got ourselves a semi-permanent weather pattern where high pressure will be right along the Pacific Northwest coast, and that area of high pressure is allowing a large area of low pressure, or a big trough with a jet stream, to dip out of south central and western Canada and into the northern plain states and the Great Lakes in the northeast United States. And it's a pattern that's been very persistent, very stubborn, and is really showing no signs of wanting to break down. So what we've had here over the last week is probably what we're going to have heading into the next week to 10 days.
So this just simply means that the jet stream is much further south than it normally is at this time of year. Is that right?
This pattern that we're seeing right now is something that we would see maybe in late August or even early September, not late July.
And so if it's that way now, what does it mean, if anything, for later? Something? Nothing?
That's hard to say. But certainly if this pattern that we have right now holds on through late August and early September, then as those northern latitudes get cooler due to lack of daylight, as the seasons begin to change, well, that could lend itself to some cool conditions at the end of the growing season. So something we'll need to watch. But this is certainly an unusual summer pattern that's taking shape across the lower 48.
And it has come with quite a little bit of rainfall, at least in our area. Any place suffering?
Well, when it comes to dryness, you'd have to go down into central, eastern, and southwest Texas. Those areas very dry. The Pacific Northwest is very dry. Those are the areas that have had some heat and some dryness this summer, while the rest of the nation, when it comes to precipitation, really no significant worries.
Let's check in on the Chinese corn and soybean growing regions. What do you see?
Well, what I see there is a pattern that will favor some good growing weather. There's going to be good chances of rain in those areas. All across China, rain chances are looking to be pretty good when it comes to temperatures. Well, they're a lot like North America. China's going to see temperatures that are going to be at to a little cooler than normal, but there may be a good balance there between steady temperatures and good chances for moisture.
And then finally, on the wheat-growing areas of the world, is there any place around the globe that might be in any trouble at all?
Well, if we were go ahead and look at maybe some of the wheat-growing areas of Europe, there will be some dry areas, especially in the short term in the Ukraine. Eastern Europe, precipitation looks to be a little bit spotty, but the long-term outlook next week is a little bit more moist.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's Don Day. He's with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report each and every Tuesday afternoon. You have a great day. I'm Todd Gleason.